Dear Swami, we offer our humble pronouns at your lotus feet. We offer this fourth and last podcast at your lotus feet for you to guide us, to speak through us, to be here with us, and to help us navigate these questions and things that we want to talk about that we don't know the answers to, that we maybe do know the answers to, but we need help figuring out.
Sai Ram, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of SaiCast. For those joining for the first time today, I am your host, Madhuri Manohar, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Anna Gorevich.
Sai Ram all. I can hardly believe that this is the last episode of this podcast series. It's been quite an adventure to put these podcasts together. And so thank you to all of our listeners and to all of our speakers for their incredible support and for their willingness to participate and share their thoughts with all of us over the last few weeks. It's been quite an adventure, as I said before. And most importantly, we've gotten to speak to our amazing women speakers along the way on energizing and inspiring topics. As you may know, the idea behind this podcast series was to energize and inspire our Psy community in the lead up to the first National Psy Women's Conference that's taking place here in the U.S. in a few weeks. And it's hard to believe that the conference is almost here.
To our fellow listeners, if you have not had a chance to listen, the three previous episodes are all available on the Psy Women's Conference website. If you have missed them, episode one was Grace Under Pressure with Sister Geeta Govindrajan. Episode two was Spirituality, Service, and the Self with Auntie Sheila Nayak. And episode three was Leaders Like Lions with Dr. Malaika Horn. The episodes can be downloaded and listened to wherever you are and whenever your schedule allows for. The website is www.saktisai.us/SWC2019. You can find the recordings by clicking on the link Pre-Conference Initiatives. And then, SaiCast, let's talk about it.
Now, let's get to our topic and our special guest. Today's episode is titled, Mirror, Mirror on the Wall. Swami has said so much about women and women's particular powers and strengths. And here to chat about that and other topics is our guest, Ashwini Nayak. For those of you who do not know Ashwini or have heard her speak, she is a lifelong Psy devotee, having had her grandparents come to Swami in the 1950s. She attended Swami's school as an elementary school student and has spent the rest of her life in the U.S. She's been an SSE teacher and a regional young adult representative, and she currently lives in California and is raising her children while also teaching SSEHB classes at a local school as part of her SSEHV practicum.
Thank you both for having me here today, and Sai Ram to all of you. It's been a pleasure getting to know you, Anna and Madhuri, and I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
Great. So thank you. We've done a brief introduction to our listeners, but is there something that you'd like to share that that you want us to know?
Well, I can share with you, you know, my initial reaction when you approached me about this particular topic. I thought it was it might be a nice, fun sharing, because I actually grew up a tomboy. So when I saw the topic, I looked at Swami and I said, what do you want me to share? Because even when I spoke to my mom, she thought it was very funny, because, you know, I was that child where, you know, when she actually took me for ballet classes, and boy, did I not have any grace whatsoever to be twirling around and doing any of that. But I loved playing basketball. Absolutely loved playing basketball. I would come home from school and I would look if we had a game that day, very excitedly wanting to get over to the gym as soon as possible and start practicing. So, you know, I'm looking at Swami and, you know, I asking him, there is always a reason for something, and there is something that he would like me to share on the topic of womanhood. And perhaps that maybe is where it all is, you know, that there is no cookie cutter definition of womanhood. And it's going to be very interesting to see how we go through this conversation, how some of the things that Swami has described about women, how now in my role as a mother, many of those descriptions have come to life for me and have come to show me so much meaning. The other thing I would like to share is that, as I said, I called my mom. She is probably the best example for me in my life of how to be a woman as a wife, as a mother, and she is also a teacher of SSE. And following all of the examples she has given me of how she has led her life has been the best teacher for me in my life of how to lead my life in every role that is given to me. She probably gave me the best message when she was able to hand my brother and I to Swami when he asked us to join Satya Sai School Uttakamand in the late 1970s. She was able to take her two children, and when Swami said, bring them here, it's a boarding school, she did not hesitate. She did not hesitate. And my father followed along and said, no problem. They both did not hesitate. And that was the message the seed that has been planted in me, that this kind of dedication and love and understanding of our guru and who Swami is and who God is and what is the purpose of our life and what is the purpose of us being here. She told me all of that. What is the priority of us being here on this earth? She told me all of that in that one act of saying, yes, Swami, here, take my children. That has probably been the most defining action of my parents in my life. So those are the two things I wanted to share a little bit more about. Now you know a little bit more about me.
Yeah, thank you, Sister Ashwini, for sharing that. It's so funny how Swami, time again, constantly pulls us all out of our comfort zone. I mean, it is definitely hard, but also since it's Swami pulling us out of the comfort zone, he makes sure it's very easy. And you as a kid studied in Swami's school. So is there any experience that sticks out of your mind from those years that you spent there as his student?
There are many, many experiences, fond moments, and also, of course, homesickness. Just at the very beginning, you know, there was this feeling of, you know, who are all of these other children? And as we started to get to know each other, we, of course, became a family there. And, you know, some of the experiences that stick out are his Swami's fondness for role plays. He felt that that was a very good educational tool for us children to understand how to be and how to think and how to act. And not just the school was not about just sitting and listening about how to be truthful and how to be disciplined and how to be respectful. There was no didactic, any kind of lecture like that. It was he was the greatest teacher and taught the teachers how to bring out these values in us children. And so I remember being in plays, and till this day, I know from a play that I did in front of Swami. We often did plays in the school, but every so often we had the opportunity of doing those plays in front of Swami. And one of those plays, I was a rich woman in a household, and I was the owner of the household, and there was only one other person in the play, and it was a child who was playing the servant in the house. And as we're doing this play, I, you know, walk into my room and there's something of mine that is missing. And I immediately accuse the servant, "You took my jewelry." I believe it was a ring. It was some sort of jewelry. "You took my ring. Give it back." And the servant is saying, "Please, madam, no, I did not take it." And I accuse her over and over again in the play. And then I move to the next scene. I find it having fallen somewhere. And I see the piece of jewelry, and I have to learn to go back to the servant and say, "I am very sorry. I accused you unjustly." And instead of doing my due research, I jumped to conclusions and I accused you. So see, just from that one play that I did in front of Swami, for the rest of my life, I do not ever jump to accusing anybody of anything. I never jump. There's always understanding. So we have to learn to have self-restraint and self-control and make sure that our eyes are turned towards ourselves first. What have I done? What can I change? What am I doing? How do I fix this first by looking at myself, and then I can kindly ask the people around me. So I still have that play in my mind. We did many, 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 many role plays like this. And then some we did in Pune Chandra Hall in Prashanti Nilayam. One of those plays, I was given the opportunity to play the role of Swami. And in that particular time, I was waiting backstage. This play was about the different saints, and one saint at a time was coming out and talking and about the main their main message. And I was the last to come out. I was still behind the curtain. And Swami, I noticed Swami getting up from his chair and starting to walk to the backstage. So I was still in the backstage. I had not gone out yet, and Swami came around to the back behind the curtain, and there are two men sitting there, two devotees sitting there on the chairs waiting to receive Swami, and they point to me saying, "Swami, look, there's another Swami standing there behind the curtain." And Swami looks at me and he gives me an abhayasta. And I didn't know what to do. I just looked at him and I put my hand up too, similar to him. I think I was saying hello, but it almost looked like I was returning an abhayasta. And as I went out on the stage, I made my talk, and we finished the play. And I was so young at the time, I did not really look into it too much. I thought it was just a fun moment, a fun interchange between Swami and myself in the backstage. And later on in life, I started to realize I got another opportunity in the U.S. to play Swami again. And I started to get the message you know, Swami is not outside of you. You are Swami. I am God. You are Swami. Be Swami. Be the message. So as I'm reflecting back on these opportunities, you know, these, fun memories from my time being a student with Swami, he never does anything without some meaning attached to it. And as I'm reflecting back, I get more and more meaning out of all of these experiences.
That's such a beautiful story you shared, Sister Ashwini, about the role plays and how Swami gave you the advice indirectly about not to jump to any conclusions. And just for the benefit of our listeners, around what age group were you in Swami school? And is there any experience from your childhood at his Uti school that relates to womanhood, and it's something that you carry with you even today?
The age group would be, I was between the age of 5 and 9. Between the age of 5 and 9, I was there. You know, when Swami asked my brother, my mother, for my brother to be enrolled in the school, I was sitting there in the corner in the room, and Swami looked over and Swami said, "And put her in too." And my mom said, "Oh, Swami, but she's only 4 years old." And so Swami said, okay, next year." So we waited 1 year, and so I started my first grade at 5 years old and went on through fourth grade. Now, as far as girls and boys, there was really no difference to Swami. See, even a girl played his role. Girl played the role of Swami in these plays. He did not see any difference between us. So there was no really any discussion about whether girls or boys. He looked at us, we felt quite equally. There was nothing to be even spoken about at that time. There are experiences that when we were at that time, we used to be called for interviews with Swami. And I remember being in the interview room and Swami talking to my mother and my grandmother and talking to my father and grandfather, everybody equally. There was no such thing as I'm talking to the men and then the women are sitting here and listening. Nothing like that. In fact, many a time my mother and my grandmother, the women, my aunt, they would all dominate even the conversation with Swami. Swami was so loving towards all in there. And one time my grandmother asked Swami, can women chant Gayatri? And Swami said, "Of course you can chant Gayatri. Gayatri Devi herself is a goddess." And he explained, he said, "You know, back in the day, the women even had the Upanayanam ceremony, which is the sacred thread ceremony, the rite of passage to learning the spirituality, you know. And this is something that we are doing just for boys now." And Swami said, "The girls also did it. But what happened was the husband were not getting their tea on time because the women were doing Sandhya Vandan, which are the rites that are associated with having received Upanayanam or the sacred thread and received the Gayatri mantra. So the women were doing Sandhya Vandan just as the men, but the men weren't getting their tea on time. So they took it away and they said, no, the women cannot have it anymore because we cannot get continue with our day without our tea." So that is one fond memory of Swami talking about how women are just as important and some of the things that are man-made. He will say, "No, that is man-made." You know, when we ask him, "Is this something that we cannot do?" No, Swami will say, "You can do it. That rule is man-made."
That's a pretty incredible story. I'd heard this, you know, Swami saying that women should be chanting the Gayatri, but it's so interesting to hear Swami say this about the thread ceremony specifically, because it really brings to mind all of the sort of social and now more artificial barriers that exist between opportunities and sort of and roles for men and women. But it sort of brings me back to the stories that you shared from when you were, you know, small and in school with Swami, how when Swami blessed you and you in your Swami costume or dress returned it, like that is such a powerful moment. Maybe in the moment you didn't, you know, as you said, it you didn't really realize, you know, how to react or how, you know, what to do, and that just felt natural to you. But it's such a deep and powerful image. I mean, imagine someone, you know, like, you know, us blessing Swami, like God, and the fact that happened, and that
Anna, I forgot to mention that Swami, when that happened, Swami actually laughed. He looked at me and he laughed when that happened. He smiled and he laughed. Yes, and. You're reminding me of when we were, another time when my mom and I were sitting in darshan line and Swami was walking by and he sneezed. He gave a little sneeze and my mom instinctually said, God bless you. And he again looked at her and his very sweet, most loving smile. He gave her a smile saying, yes, God bless me.
What really strikes me is that all of these experiences, they go to the fundamental nature of who we are. And that to Swami, there is no difference, you know, like kid, adult, man, woman, underneath, like he knows that we are all the same and that we are all God. It's just to us that we're the ones who are creating all of these barriers and limitations.
Yeah, it actually kind of reminds me of something that Swami had said. He said, both you and I are God, and the only difference is I know I'm God, but you don't know yet that you are God as well. And while we were having our conversation offline, something which was very interesting that you shared with me and Anna was, you were doing your doctorate in molecular biology when motherhood became a huge part of your life. And you did mention about how you stepped away from your professional degree to concentrate more on being a mother. And thinking of that today and in terms of today's thought process in society, could you share some thoughts on how you felt so much of peace and conviction with your decision to step away professionally, and just some thoughts discussing about societal expectations versus your own personal conviction?
Absolutely. You know, something that I had shared with you was that when I was a child, something that I felt very naturally, completely, nothing that anybody had talked to me about or something, nothing that anybody had taught me or influenced me. I just knew at the age of 10, I remember saying to myself, I want to be a mother. That's what I want to be. Almost like, you know, when you ask, you know, children, what do you want to be when you grow up? And they tell you all of their fun answers. If you were to ask me at that age, what do you want to be when you grow up? I would have said mother. Not that it was a profession or a career in my mind. I just knew that that's what my destiny was going to be, maybe. I don't know. But see, as a child, it was something that, you know, I feel that the world had not, you know, the world hasn't gotten to you yet. The world's expectations, all of that has not gotten to you yet. So I feel like that was something that I already knew from my deepest self. And then of course, yes, as I went to high school and college, all of the world's expectations came to me. What are you going to be? What are you going to be? What are you supposed to be? Another fun thing that, you know, just that ties in is that Swami always talked to me about marriage. It was the strangest thing. From the age of 6 already, he was talking to me about marriage. He said to me as a young girl, he said, "What is your husband's name?" And at age of 6, I didn't even know what a husband was. So I said, "My father's name." I said, "Ramchandra." And they all laughed. Done, right? And then again, another time he said, "I will do your marriage." So somewhere in there, Swami always knew that marriage was supposed to be in my destiny. So fast forward, I am doing my college. I'm doing graduate school. And then I'm wondering, you know, what am I? I have this job, you know, I'm working at IBM. And at some point, there's just all of this angst inside of me. And it's as if I'm just not in the right place. I'm not doing the right thing. But I continued, you know, what am I supposed to do in my 20s? Of course, I've studied, I'm doing my job. And I continued with my job. But every time I went to see Swami, I handed him a letter saying, "Still not married, Swami. Still not married, Swami. Still not married, Swami." And then I got married. I got married, and right after I got married, I was doing my doctorate in molecular biology. At that point, I had decided I have had enough of technology. My degree was also in biology and biochemistry, and I thought, I want to put it all together, and I'm going to see how I can do that by doing my doctorate in molecular biology. There are some things such as called bioinformatics. I'm going to pursue that. And lo and behold, as I'm doing that first year of my molecular biology, I completed the whole year successfully, top marks, all of that was there, and surprise, I was pregnant. And the moment I knew that I was pregnant, and soon after found out I was a baby boy, I fell in love with this baby boy, and I had absolutely no desire to go back to the university. Absolutely no desire. No desire to the point where they started calling me saying, "Where did you go? Where did you go?" I didn't even tell them that I was leaving. I was that in bliss that I was going to have this child. And I felt such an aligning of something that was supposed to be happening. I'm supposed to be doing this. I'm supposed to be with my child, and I left, very, very happily left my career life, and I embraced my role as a mother.
That question really resonated with me because I'm going to be starting my doctorate this year, and it just was so fascinating that there was all these societal expectations, like society always has these expectations from you, and you have your own personal desires and how one would, I don't know, how one would find peace when there's so much of chatter around you. So that's why I was curious to ask you that question.
Yeah. It's a very good segue to our next question, which is, Ashwini, the story that you shared about your own personal decision-making process and the things that you went through really spoke to your awareness of what was right for you. So could you comment a little bit on what you believe is the relationship between self-awareness and empowerment? To me, I feel like there is a relationship, but maybe if you could comment a little bit on what that is like in practice for you and in your own decision making.
Absolutely. Yes, we are constantly being told what to do by the world. And how did I feel empowered to make that decision, right? For me, it was a very easy decision. I have absolutely no regrets. Never do I look back and go, "Oh, if I had just stayed for a little bit," you know, never, not once do I reflect back and have that feeling. And what empowered me right? What made it that easy? And it was really, really, in the end, was the capacity to know deep down that you are doing something that was written somewhere else. It's already written. So this organic feeling of, I am doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing right at this moment. I am exactly where I am supposed to be. And I will continue to do it in full faith that Swami is driving this, right? That my higher self, the Swami that within me, is driving this. So that is the relationship between that self-awareness and the empowerment that you're talking about. Something about continuously having this idea that what is my purpose for being here, having that be the priority of all decision making. What is my purpose? Because nothing else matters right now. Remember, I said, when my mom gave my brother and I to Swami, and we were in Swami's school, she planted that seed. And the seed that I'm talking about is always having at the forefront of my decision making and the forefront of the choices that I'm making for myself and for my family are based on the fact that our destination is Swami. Our destination is always liberation, no matter who we are in this life. We are only just playing a role. So what do I tell myself? I have been given this life with the name Ashwini, and right now I am been given the role to play of mother. And I just have to play that role to the absolute best of my ability. Nothing that the world wants to tell me to do is important to me, because I have that awareness of who I am supposed to be right now at this moment, and it is a sojourner. At every single moment, I am a student of Swami. And in that role of mother, how can I be the best mother? What does he expect of me? That is what drives my choices, right? So when the world does not value what I'm doing, it does not matter, because I am not here for the world. I am here for Swami and my destination to be Swami. So absolutely the world does not value my decision. They think it was a careless decision. Oh my goodness, you got entrance into, you got a seat at a very good university, top molecular biology program, top marks in your class, one of the best labs, I can go on and on, the best labs in that. And I was able to disconnect in no problem. And it's because of that seed that was planted by my parents. So how do I, the world will always tell me when I say, I've chosen to be, I have this degree, I worked here, I have this experience, I can do this, that, and the other thing. All of that comes out when I have to do things for my children in their schools. All of these little skills, these worldly skills that I have, attained, all of that comes out, no problem. They are used for good projects all the time, but that is not who I am. That is not my purpose. And everybody will come to me and say, wow, what a noble thing you have chosen to do, noble thing. They have attached the adjective noble because the world has not valued it. The world does not value it. It is not a noble thing that I have done. It is the thing that you're supposed to be doing, like breathing. You're supposed to choose your path by aligning yourself with what your higher self is asking you to do. So does that mean that everybody is supposed to give up their career right now and go and be a mother or a father? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. My example only is of my life and what I felt was an aligning for me. This is something that I knew was written for me. However, can that manifest, that destiny manifest itself as a career for a woman? Absolutely. See, that self-awareness, that ability to know, you know, at any given moment what you're supposed to do, for Swami is a massive equation, right? There is your previous life karma, your soul's samskaras, you know, also everything that you learned in your previous life, the seeds that were planted in your previous life, the desires of your previous lives, and also, unfortunately, the desires that we are creating in this life. All of those things, all of the things that we have, the good things we have earned from our past lives, and not so good things we have earned, all of those are put in this massive equation, and everything has to be played out. So in the end, why does Swami say, don't worry, be happy? Because he has figured it all out for us, completely and totally figured it out. He has already looked at the equation and he has already created a solution. He has sent us here on earth and asked us, follow the path, just move along, do not worry, be happy. Because that equation, that type of understanding is incapable for us. We do not have the breadth to see that huge picture, the huge picture that Swami is looking at. So in that there is surrender, you know, the capacity for us to surrender, the capacity for us to have understanding of who our God is, who our Guru is, who we are, where the higher self is in us, and to quiet ourselves and put up a shield to the world and say, the way that my children say it, talk to the hand. And just look at the world and say, talk to the hand. Nope, I am not going to listen to all of your enticements. I am not going to listen to what you prioritize. I am going to listen to what is programmed already for me, my destiny. And I will only seek to move forward and be transformed so that I am a better version of my own self. I am not in competition with anybody else. I do not have to be better than anybody else. I only have to be a better version of my own self from when I was born to when I leave this earth. So that is where the empowerment comes. The empowerment comes in that self-awareness and that knowing of that priority. What is the priority? What is the ultimate goal? And keeping it at the forefront every time. I hope that kind of covers what you were asking, Anna.
Yeah, I mean, you brought up so many beautiful concepts, and I think you really sort of segued it really nicely into this idea of women having the capability within themselves to do whatever it is that they wish to do. And So Swami has said that women have an inner strength, and also that, this is a little bit of a long quote, but Swami has said that the scriptures have ascribed 7 virtues to women as a class: satya, truth; prema, love; dharma, righteousness; shanti, peace; sahana, tolerance; ananda, bliss; and svanubhuti, spirituality. Women can control the whole world by themselves by virtue of their inherent qualities of love and spirit of sacrifice. Swami then goes on to say that if women are given due recognition and encouragement, they will shine with brilliance in all fields and will serve the house, country, and the entire world gloriously, contributing to the welfare of the entire humanity. Women have hidden power imminent in them. You have to encourage them to exhibit their talents. So that's the end of the quote, but it's really powerful because it reminds you that we are so much more than we think.
Yes, Anna, those are beautiful quotes of Swami's. And you know, the way the the way that I look at it right now, when I see how my life has progressed and all the different roles I've been, nowhere have I had to tap into that inner strength and these virtues and powers more so than in my years of after marriage. The moment we get married, we are absolutely thrown into this relationship that really, in the end, no matter how much you know the person, may have known the person before, the moment you are put into a marriage, all of your buttons are pushed. And it's so interesting to see how Swami, for me, talked about marriage and how I felt that at some point I needed to be a mother. All of that was a straight line to Swami's prescription for me, for my particular soul. And he knew that these were the things, these were the roles that were going to help me really, really work on some of those qualities that I needed to work on in this particular life. So I have had to absolutely pull on this unknown sudden capacity that I might have for inner strength. And this is for my children, for self-restraint and self-sacrifice. All of that comes to you as a necessary part of being a mother. So in my role, I am seeing firsthand what it means to be sacrificing. I see firsthand what it means to show self-restraint. I'm seeing firsthand what it means to show understanding and balance and listening to the other person and understanding that your way is not the highway. It's everybody gets a turn in to participate. Through my role as a mother, I am looking at my children and I know that they are not children that I get to work on and say, you have to do everything the way that I want you to do. I see them and I see them sometimes as my teachers because they are also souls. They are souls that have journeyed through many lifetimes and they many a time can serve as a teacher to me. They are just in smaller bodies. But it doesn't mean that they have nothing to say. They have plenty to say. And so all of these virtues and powers that Swami is talking about, I did not know about that I may have had them, that they were inherent in me. But he has put me in a role where I can start practicing and pulling on these things that he's saying are within me and that I have the capacity to do them. And he's putting me purposefully in this as a prescription for my soul. There is no mistake in Swami talking to me about marriage and no mistake about him putting me in this role of mother and no mistake of him planting the seed somewhere along the way for me to say, I know I'm supposed to be a mother and I will take this opportunity to learn as much as I can this soul in this life as much as I can through this role.
Thanks so much for sharing that. You know, I personally, I'm not married and I don't have children, but I really identify with everything that you just shared with us because I grew up hearing, you know, my parents are Sai devotees and I grew up in a you know, household where, you know, every dinner table discussion was like a study circle. And so I really identify with this idea that any interaction you have, you know, whether it's with a spouse or children or your colleagues at work or, you know, someone you meet on the street, it's all there for a reason. It's, you know, it's karma and an opportunity for you to learn something new about yourself. And then anything that we perceive as a challenge or challenging experience is really an opportunity for us to go within ourselves and and find that thing that we need to either change within ourselves or that hidden skill or value that we need to remember how to practice in a different way, for example. And gradually, these things that we perceive of as difficulties, they're really just opportunities for us to like wear away all of the things that are preventing us from being and acting like our highest selves. And like I say this all in theory, and in practice, I know it's really hard and it's easy to get bogged down in the difficulty, but I think I'm really glad that you shared all of that with us. You know, the fact that sometimes in your interactions with your children, you sort of feel like there is a mutual two-way learning experience. And I think that that's something really beautiful because it really just shows that we are just ourselves, you know, and we are just living in this world, and all of these things around us are opportunities for us to sort of grow and create and become better versions of ourselves. And we shouldn't be afraid of that. And we should just have confidence that we can take on anything that comes, you know, no matter how hard it is, we can do it.
Yeah, Anna, just like what you said, I completely resonate with you because like you, I'm not married either. But I had a close friend tell me that she used to have like a big ego about how spiritually perfect she is, if that's even a word. And it all came crashing down once she got married and she realized she was a work in progress and she had so much of values inside her that she herself didn't know. But it was more about how all these events and situations and interactions helped her to bring out those values. So I think that would be a good segue to what I wanted to ask Ashwini next, that she has been involved in the SSEHV or the Sathya Sai Education and Human Values, and it's been an integral part of her Sai journey. So Ashwini, I wanted to ask you is how has SSEHV, both learning it and also teaching it, how has it impacted you as an individual?
Great question. Sathya Sai Education and Human Values is kind of the latest chapter, I want to say, in what Swami has, asked of me. And, you know, when I say asked of me, it's kind of put it in front of me multiple times until I've said, yes, okay, I received the message, I'm supposed to go get trained. Because I grew up, you know, in my teen years and on teaching SSE. And so I saw the course one being offered and I went for it. And yeah, SSEHV is Swami's offering for teachers to take human values education out to the public. And he has put it in such a beautiful format that any school, any current school that is, you know, the administration of any school will look at that format and think that it is coming out of some university or such. This is the way Swami has beautifully drafted it out for the Institute of Education and Human Values. So again, our guru, our Swami, as the greatest teacher, knows exactly how to impart human values to children, to adults, to everyone. And so the basic foundation of SSEHV is that values are actually already inherent in every individual. Every individual. We are born with these capabilities to love, for understanding, for respect, and the five main values, truth, right action, peace, love, and nonviolence, branch out into several sub-values. So what is what does it look like from a teaching standpoint? It is completely inquiry-based. I am not going and actually teaching anybody about human values. I am presenting the values in a way that brings it out from the children. So I'm asking questions. I'm presenting them material that gets them motivated to start looking inward themselves and saying, that's right, that's right. So we're bringing it out. So this is what Swami calls educare or educare. Educare is rooted in the Latin word educare. And educare, the meaning is the bringing out of. So that is what the root of the word education is. So it is a very difficult and easy, both sides of the coin, when you're presenting these classes, these lesson plans to children. Because what happens is you're going in there prepared with much preparation of the value and the stories, the activities, the discussion materials, all of that you're taking in with you. But you have to be prepared for where the child leads the lesson. As you're asking the questions, where the child leads, you have to be ready to respond and help them discover what they already have inside of them. So SSEHV has crossed everything for me. It has become part of my parenting as well. It has become the way that I talk to any individual that I come across, acquaintances, family, everything is based in human values now. At every moment, I think, what value is Swami trying to show me in this situation? And you're trying to decide, should I go this way? You know, you have two paths in front of you. I can leave, I can stay. Those kinds of little decisions that we have to make are rooted in my coursework that I've done with SSEHV. And it's beautiful how it can be used for parenting as well. At every moment that the children have any kind of conflicts, we have beautiful conversations we call learning moments, where they tell me what they felt in the situation, and we discover together how they can attack and provide themselves with a solution. Not me providing them with the solution, but they can come up with a solution themselves. So in this way, they are really, really almost like they're on a treadmill. They are practicing their human values every single day at every moment. And so I'm so excited that Swami has given me this opportunity to do SSEHV also in a school where I am interfacing with the children from all different backgrounds. And they all come together. And I don't know if I have time to share all of those wonderful moments of, you know, small little stories of how the children reacted in particular situations within the classroom, but maybe for another day. But this is my experience so far with SSEHV.
And Ashwini, speaking of parenting, you reminded me of a story I heard that one Swami said in the interview room. And I apologize to our listeners in advance because I didn't have time to verify its source. But just to share the story with you, a devotee asked Swami, like, in the Western world, there's so many distractions and it's very hard to bring up our child with the best of values. And Swami gave a very point blank answer. He said, good parents, good children, and bad parents, bad children. So I wanted to ask you, in a world that is filled with so many distractions for kids and even adults, such as social media, TV, cell phones, how do you keep children engaged and free from all such distractions?
So SSEHV has been really a gift to me for that, because my goodness, is the world loud, and the influence of the world so incredibly loud. I have now officially a teenager, so I have a 13-year-old and I have a 9-year-old, and they come home. They go when they go to school. I say, remember to pray to Swami to help you make good choices. And then when they come home, sometimes they tell me about some things that might have happened. Sometimes they say the day just went fine, Mama. They call me Mama. The day just went fine, Mama. Everything went okay. And sometimes they come home and they say, I don't know how to navigate. You know, I don't know what to do, Mama, in this situation. This happened or that happened. And, you know, two things that I was very clear about telling my children was that this path of discovering our human values and actually practicing them in our daily life and doing at every moment, it is not easy. It is not supposed to make their life suddenly be completely easy, and that they're going to make lots of friends and that everybody's going to love them, and their day, they're just going to go through their day skipping and hopping along. That is absolutely not the picture I paint for them. I told them, be strong inside, internally, knowing that Swami is going to guide you, and hold on very, very strongly to those values that you know are correct. You know that that is the way to behave. And it's not, see, for children, when they're in the school, ego is very, very big. Ego plays a huge role. Every child wants to be better than the next child. Every child wants to be first in line, or they want to be ahead of the other child in line. They want to be the one that gets the award. They want all of this. So for the children who are following the values, my children, I tell them every day, it is not about us. Every moment is not about us. The win comes in practicing the value of kindness, of sharing, of saying, no, it's fine, you go first. And all of that is going to be very, very difficult because we ourselves are going against our own ego in that moment to do that. And then with practice, it gets easier and easier. And I told them, over time, you are going to see that other children are going to, over time, they are going to react well back to you. And you will see those results over time, but it's not going to be immediate. And something else that I tell them is that you may seem lonely now, but it will change as you go on. We will all, even as adults, when I make these decisions, interacting with other parents or administration or even people on the street, I know that people sometimes see some of the things that I do as absolutely insane or ridiculous. Like, why would you do that? That doesn't make any sense. And I said, yeah, it doesn't make any sense in the world, but it makes sense up there for me. I can say up there for them. For me, I can say, but it makes sense inside, in with my higher self. It makes complete and total sense for me to do that. I will give, and it will not matter to the world, but I will give, it will matter to my higher self and to other people. I point to the sky and I say, but it matters up there. So also that also I tell the kids. I tell them, you know, you're going to come home and you're going to feel like you did all this good and nobody cared. They all took advantage of you. But I'm telling you right now, number one, it counts with me and your dad. It counts with us. And also, I can tell you 150% Swami saw what you did, and it counts with him. And Swami is behind you. So when you mentioned also a little earlier about self-confidence, that is where the self-confidence comes. The self-confidence in knowing that Swami knows and that my higher self is I am completely okay with my higher self. My higher self is not upset with me that I went against it and decided to do something against the grain. I am completely aligned with my higher self. So when I'm acting in within the values. So these things are, you know, all again, just a constant practice. It's not easy. It is, you know, your ego will just not let you do some of these things. There's so many behaviors that we are programmed to be self-preserving. Self-preserving is our programming, but we have to go against that grain. And the more and more and more in tune we bring out, we're using SSEHV has been wonderful for me, using it to bring out those inherent qualities. And now, as we had talked about, as a woman to bring out this inherent capacity to love, the inherent capacity to love, as to have self-restraint, to know that I do not have to anything to prove to the world. I do not have to say anything to prove anything to anybody. I am good. I am whole. I am God. I am Swami. And Swami will help me. In that self-confidence, we can live our lives. We can live each day in joy, not in fear, not in anxiety, not in worries, not in buried in all of that, but we can live it in joy, knowing 100% with no doubt that Swami is here and Swami is speaking to us and loving us through our higher self.
Thank you so much, Ashwini. I think that's an amazing note to end on, because we sort of came full circle. I mean, the SSCHV is so crucial to helping kids realize how to express their higher selves, whether or not they realize they're doing it. But then also as an adult, I mean, bringing it back to self-confidence and awareness, those are such powerful concepts, and I think really applicable to everyone, regardless of whatever life stage they're in, you know, whether it's kids or young adults or adults. I'm really glad that we were talking about this today, because I think that you have a really interesting perspective, especially because you work with children.
All Swami's grace, you know? Everything that Swami has put in front of me, I take as a lesson, right? So I'm always going to be a student of Satya Sai University, you know, and I have gratitude to Swami for every lesson that he has thrown in my direction. And I pray to him that he will continue to give me the confidence to follow on this path and continue on this path, no matter what the world wants to give us, no matter what the world wants to make us do.
That's a very good takeaway lesson for all of us here today, to always and constantly ask ourselves, what does Swami want from us? And apart from that, I definitely had a lot of takeaway lessons from today's talk. One would be about Swami advising us to chant Gayatri Mantra. I think throughout my childhood and even till date, my dad keeps saying that, but I don't follow it through. And I think from today, I would make a more conscious effort of chanting Gayatri Mantra and actually trying to be more still and quiet and cutting down all the chatter around me and just allow him to take over. And thank you so much for spending this time with us, Ashwini, and giving us so many snippets of information as well as ways in which tap into our higher self and move more close towards our Swami.
Ashwini, thank you again so much for being here tonight. And thank you to everyone who tuned in to listen as well. To our listeners, as you know, this is unfortunately the last podcast in the series. We hope you've been enjoying these four SciCasts and hearing from the incredible and inspiring women like Ashwini, who has been our guest. As we mentioned earlier, the recording and the study circle material of the previous podcast are available online at www.satyasai.us/swc2019 and by clicking through for the pre-conference initiative. The discussion material on this particular topic is posted there as well, so please, please take a look.
And please continue to check out Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp for the posts, the inspirational quotes, all the different artwork and creating offerings that our social media team has been collecting from all around the country, if not beyond. And on both Instagram and Facebook, you can search for and follow Sai Women's Conference 2019 to see these posts and all the other exciting and fun announcements that we have to share related to the Sai Women's Conference.
We hope you've enjoyed the SciCast journey as much as we have. And thank you so much to Swami for guiding us and being with us every step of the way. Sai Ram and good night.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, and see you all at the first Sai Women's Conference.